You're listening to This Week in Cardiology from theheart.org on Medscape.
Hi, everyone. This is John Mandrola from theheart.org Medscape Cardiology. And this is This Week in Cardiology for May 26th, 2017. This week, I'm going to talk about MRI and cardiac devices, statin use in the elderly, deprescribing, CRT therapy in Europe, His bundle pacing, and radial artery catheterization. First up is MRI in patients who have cardiac devices. Now, this important issue of doing an MRI scan in patients who have devices came up often at the recent Heart Rhythm Society meeting earlier this month. At HRS, the first big happening was an expert consensus statement of which I was a writing member, and this statement was released at HRS. The document reviews the extensive evidence for the feasibility and safety of scanning patients with cardiac devices, now both conditional and non-conditional devices. Other parts of the consensus document deal with radiation oncology and CT scanning in patients with cardiac devices. The second notable event at HRS was the publication or presentation of two remarkable abstracts, one from Penn and the other from Mayo. Both of these groups reported safety and feasibility of scanning patients with abandoned pacemaker leads. Now, this is big news because previously the thought was that abandoned leads were felt to be a no-go for MRI because of the possibility of an antenna effect from the abandoned lead. Now, both of these papers included small series of patients that were scanned without major incidents. A key point, though, is that MRI safety depends on institutional protocols that must be followed. This means that people with EP knowledge have to be involved with these scans. Now, I hope that these developments, the consensus statement and publications of numerous papers and abstracts on this topic, will provide some needed momentum to change the prevailing dogma that MRI scanning is unsafe in patients in cardiac devices. I can simply say it is not unsafe. Also, the next big step in this will be advocacy efforts to change the NCD, or National Coverage Decision, that denies reimbursement for MRI in patients with devices. Next topic is statin drug therapy in the elderly. So let's start by saying the benefits of statins are purely probabilistic. In other words, you don't know if they worked for you. Now, most experts agree that there is a net benefit of statin drugs in patients with established heart disease, so-called secondary prevention, but many smart people debate the harm-benefit ratio of statins for primary prevention. But at least in primary prevention, we have numerous trials to debate. We have evidence. In the elderly, there is very little evidence to debate, and that is because few elderly are included in clinical trials. A study published recently in JAMA Internal Medicine used data from the ALLHAT LLT. The original study had greater than 10,000 patients, and they used data from this sub-study to look specifically at statin use in the elderly. Before saying anything about the results, I should lead by saying this was a post-hoc secondary data analysis of the primary prevention trial of pravastatin versus control. The sub-study included about 3,000 patients without heart disease. Another caveat is that pravastatin is the least potent statin and is not widely used today. Now, the authors found no benefit when pravastatin was given for primary prevention to older adults who had moderate hyperlipidemia and hypertension, and they even noted a non-significant trend toward increased all-cause mortality with pravastatin among adults 75 years and older. Now, I point out this study because many doctors extrapolate the benefits of therapies that have been confirmed in studies of younger people to older people. This, I believe, should be done with extreme caution, if at all. The elderly are different. The elderly have more competing causes of death and thus less potential benefit from a preventive therapy. Elderly have lower drug clearance. They're usually on more drugs, and thus they have more potential for harm from drugs. The most important difference about the elderly is that they may have developed different goals of therapy. For instance, reduction in non-fatal MI over the next decade may have dropped in importance for them. I am not advocating for withholding preventing therapy to all elders. I do think, however, we should acknowledge the uncertainty of benefit of statin drugs in the elderly, and we should discuss this gap in evidence with our patients. Next up is the issue of deprescribing. Until recently, common sense and sound clinical judgment were the only things guiding deprescribing non-beneficial medications. Now, recently, we have some evidence. Researchers from the UK performed a systematic review of 66 papers to determine the safety of deprescribing blood pressure medications and to determine the proportion of people remaining normotensive for more than 6 months after deprescribing. This review was published in the Journal of Hypertension, and the bottom line was that 1 in 4 people can have blood pressure medicines successfully withdrawn over a 2-year period. Two factors associated with successful withdrawal included monotherapy and lower blood pressure before starting. Now, I highlight this deprescribing story for 2 reasons. One, we should always be thinking about taking patients off of non-beneficial medicines, especially in the elderly, where blood pressure medicines can cause harm, mostly due to hypotension. And in many cases, we should consider high blood pressure largely unnecessary. For instance, weight loss, exercise, reduction of alcohol intake if it is high, are all measures that can allow discontinuation of blood pressure medications. The fourth topic today is about cardiac resynchronization therapy, CRT, in other words. Now, a survey of practice patterns in 42 European countries revealed that CRT, cardiac resynchronization therapy, use has changed over the past 8 years when the first CRT survey was conducted. These changes include, first, 1 in 5 patients get CRT as an alternative to conventional pacing in patients with heart failure who have heart block. Secondly, fewer patients are getting CRT who have QRS less than 130 milliseconds. More older patients are getting CRT. More patients are getting CRT for class 2 heart failure. And good news is that more patients with CRT are being discharged on excellent medical therapy, including an increase in aldosterone inhibition. This survey is mentionable for 2 big reasons. One is to make a comment on the use of CRT in the elderly. Earlier in the podcast, I warned about using statins in the elderly because of a lack of evidence. The authors of this CRT survey make the same point about use of CRT in the elderly, namely that trials showing benefit from CRT included very few elderly patients. Well, that point is well taken, I agree. But here's the big difference. CRT is not used to offer a probability benefit like a statin drug. CRT is offered to treat symptoms due to heart failure. I often struggle with the CRT decision at the bedside. I know elderly patients are more apt to get a complication, and I hate complications. But on the other hand, CRT can make such a difference in a patient's quality of life. Now, the other reason to mention this survey is that, in my opinion, HIS bundle pacing will soon render many of these CRT devices obsolete. HIS bundle pacing allows narrowing of the QRS. HIS bundle pacing does with 2 leads and a standard generator what CRT does with 3 leads and more expensive generator. I wrote a feature story on HIS bundle pacing last week, is that HIS bundle pacing was a huge topic at HRS, and I'll put the link below. The final topic this week is about radial artery catheterization. Now, speaking of innovative and transformative techniques, I see similarities between HIS bundle pacing and radial artery cath. Obviously, radial artery catheterization is years ahead of HIS bundle pacing. But doing catheterization through the wrist began as a clinician-driven technique. Early adopters of radial artery cath had to be vocal promoters. It took time, but now radial cath has been accepted as superior in most cases. A recent publication in JACC Intervention Journal added to the many benefits of doing cath through the radial artery. This was the AKI Matrix study. It was a sub-study of the main Matrix study, which was an RCT of radial artery versus femoral artery cath during acute MI. The question here was whether or not radial artery reduced the incidence of acute kidney injury relative to femoral artery cath. And the answer was that it did. Radial artery catheterization had 15.4% incidence of acute kidney injury versus 17.3% in a femoral artery catheterization group, and the p-value was 0.015. Of course, there's plausibility here too, right? There's fewer bleeds, fewer transfusions, maybe even less plaque emboli from disruption of aortic debris with radial artery catheterization. It's pretty clear to me that radial artery catheterization is the superior technique for almost all cases of intervention, even acute myocardial infarction. So that's it for this week in cardiology. Thanks for listening. I'm glad that you did. Until next week, this is John Mandrola from the Heart.org Medscape Cardiology.
You're listening to This Week in Cardiology from the Heart.org on Medscape.